Hi, I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories outdoors. Today's story is from a woman named Susan Shane. It begins the way many of our adult lives start, with college, internships, dreams of a big city job. Susan was constantly striving to keep up with her peers. And it was working. She was barreling toward a successful, high-powered future. Then she had a job interview that changed her path forever. On this episode, she shares her story. It's a story about dropping out of the rat race and wasting time. And it's about the surprising things that can happen when we stop trying to get ahead. I'll let Susan take it from here.
It was 8 in the morning, and I had an interview in 30 minutes. Shit. I jumped in the shower, threw on slacks and a sweater, and began walk jogging, fast enough to get there on time, slow enough to not draw much attention, toward the career center. I was 21 years old and in my last months of college. I had always been driven, and now I was heading toward the goal I'd had for years, to live and work in New York City. I pictured myself at a fancy marketing, communications, or public relations job. I was going to wear beautiful clothes, talk about worldly things, and turn brunch into a religion. This particular morning, my interview was with the financial powerhouse known as Bloomberg. As soon as I entered the Career Center, with my wet hair and half-eaten granola bar, I felt out of place. Surrounding me in the waiting room were my fellow applicants. Nearly all were male, and all were in suits. Thankfully, I saw someone I knew from class and plopped down next to him. "You ready?" he asked. "Do I look ready?" I responded, and we both laughed. He offered to share some notes he had about Bloomberg's history and mission. I scoffed. "They never actually ask you that stuff," I said, but I scanned his carefully typed sheet of paper anyway. Soon after, they called my name. "Good luck," he said. I entered the room, more people in suits. I sat down and smiled. The main interviewer gave some introductions and then hopped right in. "So, tell me what you know about Bloomberg," she said. A series of four-letter words flashed through my brain like a movie marquee. "You're a financial media company," I said with confidence. "And, you were founded in 1981. "You've got to be kidding me," I thought. Was that really all I had absorbed from that guy's prep sheet? The interviewers looked at me expectantly. "Anything else?" asked the woman. "You're based in New York?" From there, the interview got progressively worse. It was becoming clear that I didn't have a chance. So I decided to do things differently than in past interviews. I decided to tell the truth. The top three companies I'd love to work for, I probably should have said Bloomberg, Bloomberg, and Bloomberg. But instead, I rattled off a few nonprofits. Where I saw myself in 10 years? As the owner of a farm stand that had produce and honey and baby goats. What I wanted to do after graduation? Move west and ski. As the words started flowing, they surprised even me. Where had these desires been hiding? I couldn't even call them dreams, because dreams are something you think about and wish for. These were slivers of ideas that had huddled at the back of my brain, gathering dust behind good grades, tall buildings, and fat paychecks, until I'd said them out loud to a group of pinstripe strangers. I'd never acknowledged they were there. As I headed home, thoughts crowded my brain. I thought about my string of internships in advertising and PR. I had enjoyed the prestige, the feeling of importance and adulthood. But I realized I hadn't actually liked the work. It felt fun, almost theatrical, to wear a badge at my unpaid government internship in the heart of DC, but the hours went by much more quickly at my evening waitressing job in Georgetown. Having been in the service industry for years, that's where I felt like myself, where I felt understood. If I began a real grown-up career, I probably wouldn't have that outlet anymore. So I wondered, could I actually see myself doing all those things I'd imagined? Taking the subway to work? Sitting in an office? Spending thousands to live in a shoebox? I envisioned that future and I grimaced. For years, it seemed, I had pictured a life, but had never bothered to picture myself in it. Acknowledging that felt scary, but good. A little bit like picking up the train tracks of my life and cautiously setting them down in a different direction. I didn't know where those tracks would end up, but I had an idea of where I wanted them to start. When I arrived at my apartment, I threw open the door and told my roommate, "I think I'm moving to Colorado." My idea lost some shimmer when I shared it with others. Many of my friends and classmates looked at me skeptically when I told them about my new plan. "Really?" they'd ask. "You sure you're not making a mistake? You won't get these years back, and by the time you finish goofing off, you'll be way behind in your career." They thought it was reckless to waste time like this, at such a formative moment in my life. As a competitive person who'd always imagined a certain lifestyle for myself, their questions got to me more than I'd like to admit. For as long as I could remember, I had been on a singular path. Work hard, get internships, build resume, land job, be successful. And now I was going to leave all that behind. For what? Some fresh powder? Some mountain air? I had never even been to Colorado before. I saw my classmates' offers roll in, from high-dollar consulting firms and prestigious law schools, and I wondered if I was making a mistake. I wondered if I was squandering all the opportunities I'd been given, if I'd ever find a rewarding career. So much of my past had been focused on these next steps, and suddenly I was falling, or rather jumping, off the wagon. Would I be wasting time? Would I regret it? I was moving west with my 96 Camry and savings from my waitressing jobs, and my peers were about to earn more money than I would have known what to do with. Was it worth it? Flash forward 6 months. I was on my first hike in Colorado, and I was nervous. I asked my roommate again and again, how far was it? Did I bring enough snacks? Would there be snakes? Are there snacks we could use to distract the snakes? As we climbed the mountain, stopping frequently so I could catch my breath at the 10,000-foot altitude, I admired the columbine tracing the hillside. I listened to the chickadees chirp. I gaped at the snowy peaks penetrating the vast blue canvas that is the western sky. And then I stopped asking my roommate how much further. I stopped checking my watch every 4 minutes. On that hike, and on the many hikes and river trips and ski days that followed, I felt a release I hadn't known before. The calls, the job applications, the endless list of life maintenance tasks, they could all wait. When I was outdoors, there was rarely an appointment I had to get to. Usually, the only deadline I had was the sun. I loved that feeling, and I attempted to apply it to my life outside the outdoors, too. During my first winter in Breckenridge, I tried to let the mountain vibes seep into my bones and melt away some of my East Coast neuroses. I let the word chill enter my vocabulary, and I let my one ski bum season turn into three. I worked at a ski shop, and as a liquor rep, a restaurant hostess, and an assistant manager at the Cold Stone Creamery, where I became strictly devoted to ice cream for breakfast. I embodied the first chair, last call lifestyle and skied several times a week. I spent long days and long nights making lifelong friends. I was having a blast, and I felt so alive. But my concerns about wasted time never disappeared. They barged into my brain when I was least expecting them. While hosting Friendsgiving, while slicing through the trees on my skis, while learning to scuba dive, I'd think to myself, isn't it time you grew up? Who do you think you are, 22, 24, 26 years old and without a real career? I saw friends getting better jobs and bigger promotions and beautiful houses. I wondered what it would feel like to live without roommates, to eat out whenever I wanted, to own a pet, or at least a houseplant. I wondered if I was foolish, naive, irresponsible. I wondered if I'd ever be successful, whatever that means. These nagging thoughts kept pushing me to look outside my Colorado bubble. I applied to grown-up jobs, but never accepted the resulting interviews. I asked my friends about city sublets, but never signed a lease. I kept telling myself I'd find my way somewhere, a job, a place, a life I was supposed to lead before the sunset. From Colorado, I found my way to Ketchikan, Alaska, where I worked as the office manager for a sea kayaking company, to South Korea, where I taught English, and then back to Alaska again. One evening, we were having a bonfire on the beach. The sky was a hazy blue that, because it was late June, refused to darken. We wrapped wild salmon in tinfoil, seasoning the fillets with lemon and capers, and eating them straight out of the packet. We scanned the horizon for humpbacks, calling out whale whenever we spotted a telltale spout. I grabbed an Alaskan summer ale and perched on a log next to one of my friends. "What job are you working next?" he asked. I paused for a moment. Though I'd certainly been thinking about the question, as my seasonal job would end in a few months, I hadn't verbalized my response to anyone. "I think I'm going to give this writing thing a shot," I replied. "Really?" he said. "That's awesome." "Yeah," I thought, "it is." I hadn't been one of those kids who grew up knowing they wanted to become a writer. If you look at my papers from elementary school, you would have thought I'd become a marine biologist or a librarian or, at one particularly confused point in kindergarten, a dog. I didn't know any writers, and the thought of doing it as a career had never crossed my mind, but my unconventional lifestyle had given me so many stories to tell. I started with informal travel blogs, which I wrote during off-season adventures so my mom would know I was alive. Initially, it seemed like a chore, but over time, I fell in love with the practice. I fell in love with sharing sights and tastes through words, with revealing the delightful side of places considered scary, with divulging my many mishaps in hopes others could avoid the same mistakes, with showing people you don't need a partner or a lot of money to see the world. Later, when I moved to South Korea to teach English, I started a more official blog about travel and seasonal jobs and how I was finding all these opportunities. A few months later, I saw the English language newspaper was looking for freelancers, and I applied on a whim. Things snowballed from there. And now, a decade since packing up and driving to the mountains, I've built a location-independent freelance writing career that lets me lead a life I never knew I was chasing. I don't wear a suit, I don't commute, and I rarely brunch. Instead, I work in my sweatpants from wherever I happen to be living. In the past year, that's included Mexico, Guatemala, Maine, and, as a throwback to my 21-year-old self, Manhattan. When family members need me, I've worked from their hospital rooms and homes without having to negotiate vacation time. I still don't have a dog, but I have petted all kinds of mutts on all sorts of streets. I fed my appetite for adventure and tacos and freedom, all while feeding my endless curiosity. I hadn't been looking for this career, but it found me. It found me while I was wasting time. Six years after graduating, one of my college classmates wrote to me. She'd been one of the people I'd envied. She'd gotten into a great law school, landed a job at a great law firm, and seemed to have a great life. But in her email, she disclosed how much she hated her job, how much she envied my lifestyle, how much she envied me. She had plenty of money, a nice house, and a rock star resume, but she worked nonstop. She'd lived in the same city for years, and she couldn't remember the last time she'd been on vacation. I was shocked. She'd done everything right, and I thought she had it all. But in reality, this wonderfully smart and lovely person now felt trapped in a life she'd built for herself but didn't want. As time went on, more and more of my former classmates seemed to be struggling in the same way. By the time I'd found my footing as a writer, many of them were burnt out, looking for new careers. They had more dollars in their bank accounts, but based on their comments, it seemed like they had less life in their years. Although I'm not religious, I couldn't help but think, there but for the grace of God, or rather Bloomberg, go I. And at that moment, I realized I had made the right decision all those years ago. Looking back, I am incredibly grateful for the years I wasted and for what they taught me. I'm less afraid of spending my time in ways that seem frivolous, but that make me feel full and alive. It's a lesson I'm still learning. Time is precious, yes, which is exactly why we shouldn't schedule it out to the second. In our overconnected, overcomplicated, overwhelming world, the fact we have moments to waste is a gift. So I try not to think twice when someone proposes a last-minute camping trip. I almost always leave my phone in the car when I go to dinner. I will, with only the teeniest twinge of guilt, skip cleaning my house so I can spend the afternoon reading in a hammock. Because I know that those wasted minutes, those hours, and those days could lead somewhere magical.
That was Susan Shane. She's a freelance writer who covers personal finance, travel, and food. She's written for outlets like the New York Times and CNN, and she recently released a Pay What You Want ebook called The Ultimate Guide to Seasonal Jobs: How to Have Fun, Make Money, and Travel the World. You can find it on her website, susanshane.com, and we have a link to it on our website as well. A big thank you to Lucy Orgill, Mountain Bike Radio, and Deb and Vince Garcia for their financial contributions to Out There. If you would like to make a contribution of your own, just head over to our website, outtherepodcast.com, and click support. You can make a one-time donation, or better yet, you can contribute to our Patreon campaign. Patreon is a crowdsourcing platform for creative endeavors, and it lets you make smaller donations on a monthly basis. Regardless of how you give, thank you so much for your support. Your gifts make this show possible. Oh, and I should say, we also have t-shirts, tank tops, hoodies, and stickers for sale at our website. Check those out as well while you're there. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Eggerking, and our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.